LID Radio is proud to announce its partnership with the Institute of Leadership and Management and their weekly recap hosted by Matt Packer.
Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we take a critical look at some topical developments with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this episode, I'll be exploring stories up to Friday, the 20th of July. Joining me in this endeavour is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello there, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
Okay, in our first item, we're focusing on a really interesting column over at salon.com, which asks the question, can your job make you a more controlling parent? Written by Wharton organisational psychologist Adam Grant, the piece looks back at the work of US sociologists Melvin Cohn and Carmi Scula, who found that employees who were given highly routine-based tasks at work were more likely to be domineering at home and demand unquestioning obedience from their children. Bringing it up to date, Grant writes, quote, even in jobs with plenty of discretion, freedom can be ripped away at any moment. If a supportive mentor gets fired, a new boss insists on unreasonable deadlines, or a new client starts making outrageous demands, close quote, with the potential that the employees in question will take it out on their kids. What's your take on this thought-provoking piece?
Well, all the research that we've done invariably reveals how important people find autonomy.
Yeah.
And control over their working life. And this obviously expressed itself quite frequently in flexible working. And so it's not really surprising that if that autonomy is denied, when there's such a clearly identified need for it, the frustration manifests itself in other areas of people's lives. And I think the blurring of work-life boundaries that we're increasingly seeing is evidence of the fact that you cannot really compartmentalise your life in the way that almost appeared to be fashionable, that you can somehow leave your work persona at work and then adopt your new at-home persona. Of course, the frustrations at work are going to spill over into home and vice versa.
What do you think people can do to mitigate these effects and to prevent work stuff from spilling over egregiously into the home arena?
I think firstly, it's a recognition of how important it is to ensure that control over your working life is built into the job design. And this is going back to the work of Frederick Hertzberg in the 50s. And again, it's back to creative solutions and empowering people and training people for more than the job that just needs to be done, a broader job or the next job, and really investing in them. I think this is a great piece of research because it brings together so many of the things that we've talked about in previous podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next up, we're turning our attention to how technology can enhance the remote working experience. And this is inspired by a fascinating article at Business Insider about US firm eXp Realty, which has gone to quite extraordinary lengths to create a shared culture among its distributed team. As the article explains, the firm has built an island in a computer server that its dispersed workforce reports into as a virtual campus. The main thing that stands out from the piece is that the employees are totally used to being immersed in this world. Now, not every company is going to have access to such sophisticated software, so on a more basic level, how can firms preserve the human touch in their interactions with remote workers?
Again, the research that we did some years ago about remote working and how to get the best from distributed teams, that requirement for the social interaction, the human aspect of work was really important. And one of the things that we found that the use of voice rather than the written word is so, so important.
Yeah.
We found low-tech solutions. You know, some organisations with dispersed offices would have a camera in both offices, so at least you could see that the other person was there at their desk. The younger people found this fine. There was no sense of being watched or recorded, whereas some of the older respondents saw this as being
surveillance culture.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to use those sorts of technologies, it has to be really clear that they're not being used for any other purposes.
Mm.
And that is where you'd really need to trust the employer to use them for all the good things and not for monitoring and controlling uses.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite fascinating actually how email has really dropped to the bottom of the chart as an effective communication method, even as technology has become more prevalent among remote workers. I mean, it's almost like email is now seen as a barrier to communication more than an actual facilitator.
Oh, email overload is so frequently cited as one of the real downsides of distributed work teams, that you have so many emails to deal with. And again, email provides that real trail of team member interaction. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, that's the sort of thing we never anticipated when we started using email so frequently, how copying people in is used by many as a sort of defense mechanism.
Yeah. I think also email has become the home of passive aggression as well.
Yes, and of course, you know, as you and I both know, because of the work we do, trying to convey what you mean and feel in the written word is really difficult.
Yeah.
You know, the best emails, like, you know, the shortest pieces take the longest time to write.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that so many of them are misunderstood.
Yes, indeed. And well, now we're getting into our third item. There's also a pretty major communication problem at the heart of this one. Global pizza chain Papa John's has made a dramatic change at the top following a PR crisis in which it emerged that founder John Schnatter had used a racial slur during a recent conference call. As a result of his remarks, Schnatter has been removed from day-to-day operations. But the real headache for the board here is that he was intrinsically identifiable with the company. Not only did it take Schnatter's first name, but Schnatter himself regularly starred in its TV ads and his photo adorned its pizza boxes. The firm is now busily scrubbing him from its marketing materials. Does this show that it's risky for firms to be so closely identified with their leaders?
I think it is for a firm of this size, obviously, because the risk is so great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another example of somebody making an outrageous comment and everyone else in the room thinking, I so wish that he hadn't said that. Mm. As is so often the case with small businesses that grow into huge businesses, the over-identification with the founder makes it very difficult for any sort of succession planning. But the risk of the PR damage, when that one person in just one comment can have such an adverse effect on their brand, it should be in the risk register. Is it? Probably not, because of course he's the founder, Papa John. It was his creation.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a bomb going off, really, isn't it? I mean, you think they're going to have to completely change their image because of this comment.
Well, you can't believe that it's just this one isolated incident. I mean, if he was prepared to say something or able to say something so unguarded at such an event, then I imagine other attitudes and conversations have been deemed as inappropriate. So maybe this was actually the final straw.
All right. And finally, we're taking one last foray into the 2018 World Cup and looking at one star who made a name for herself as one of the most enthusiastic supporters of the tournament. I'm talking, of course, about Croatian president Kolinda Grabar-Kitarovic, who has earned glowing press coverage for her fulsome backing of her national side. Not only did she attend almost every Croatia match in Russia on her own dime, missing just one match because of diplomatic duties, but she embraced every team member when they lost to France in the final, and also hugged everyone in the French team too. This was quite an impressive example of warm and human leadership, wasn't it?
Well, one assumes that she's a great football fan.
Yeah.
So maybe it was really not too difficult a task to watch so many football games. But to me, the real thing here is we talk so much about resilience and role modelling, great behaviour, learning from mistakes, etc., etc. But when you're faced with such a crushing disappointment, what you want to do is take the positives from that, to learn from it, to know that you can pick yourself up, to applaud the success that you've got. And all of those things, with her very presence and her actions, she was testament to that.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's great leadership. It's easy, isn't it, to take the credit when things are going really well. But when things haven't gone as well as you'd have hoped, or you have a sense of missed opportunity, that's when she's actually stepped up and said, I really rate you guys. I think you're fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, she gave every impression that it was a bit of a busman's holiday, because she appeared at every match wearing a Croatia shirt and she was yelling with everybody else. So she seemed to be very much into what was going on.
Well, that's the true football fan that sticks with their team, whatever, thick and thin. But I think as a model of somebody who is keen to show her appreciation of people and to congratulate them on the hard work, I think she couldn't have done any better.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well done, Kalinda. Okay, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Great. Thanks, Matt.